Welcome back, everyone. We're going into our third and final hour of this special Marxville in Action program. So we're going to do a little bit of something hopefully fun here before we take questions. We're going to tell our producer to generate a number, and this is going to be for a small prize, and then I'm going to give out the phone number for anyone who hasn't entered to text your number to before we give the larger prize later in the hour. So Mr. Producer, please be searching for a number through your random system, and I'll tell those who haven't entered, if you would still like to enter, it's 747-227-4477. Send a text, and you will get a contestant number which may be drawn for the next prize. So, Mr. Producer, do you have a winning number?
I do. The last four digits would be 9686, and the code is 865.
9686, and the code is 865. So if you have, now here's the problem. We've got a million people in the queue right now, and that's how we were going to try to identify that person. So is the last four digits of their phone number 9686?
Correct.
I will scroll through here real quickly and see if we can find them, that they're on the call, and we can just contact them later rather than having – they're right here. Yes, I see them. It's an area code 412.
Correct.
You have won the membership to NARSL or a subscription to the NARSL Digest to someone of your choice. So now we're going to move back into the questions, which there are quite a few here. Folks, you're doing really good on asking concise questions and keeping them short, and the answers are equally nice. We're moving through them quickly. So we're going to go back. Most of the people I see in the queue, I recognize as Pennsylvania, but now anyone can get in the queue because we've devoted the half hour to Pennsylvania specifically. So we're going to go through these rapidly as we can. So area code 267, you're on NARSL in Action.
Yes, hello. I want to ask a question about HB 192, a provision for judicial determination. I think it's on in the House form of the bill. It's on page 109, line 1 to 13, and page 111, line 5 to 21 in the Senate version. But it says that the judicial determination is required to get you off if you, I guess, I don't know what this judicial determination means. Is the lawyer lady still on it to answer
that?
She's
still on it, and I'm not sure they've got the bill in front of them, but we'll do
our
best.
And I'm paging through to try to, do you know what section you're looking at? My page numbers aren't necessarily matching up with yours.
So I think we may be getting a little too detailed for this particular call to go into the specifics of the legislation. I would really like to do generalities because the 100 plus people out here are very disconnected from this particular specific question.
Question is a judicial determination. That means a judge hearing evidence and argument and making a decision based on that.
So I apologize that we really can't get into that kind of detail, but Leah, you did, and you can welcome to do so again. Invite people that they wish to contact you how to help to do so. So area code 404, you're on NARSL in Action. 484, go ahead.
Hello and good afternoon to everyone. Good evening. Thank you for your time, everyone involved. I'm in the parcel group, and I just quickly wanted to point out that when this decision took place last summer, obviously, many of us have received notices when SORNA changed. We receive our notices in days, and yet the decision, even though it was the summer, and of course there's been the appeals and everything else, but yet the PSP needs to take 18 months to find us. They didn't seem to have a problem finding us to send us notice that, hey, by the way, your time has been extended, but yet they have to take their time to find us. So
it's a great question. Why is it they can do it so quickly on the upside?
Because they can.
Yeah, because they can.
And my question really being,
I don't want to say the 18 months was kind of an off the thumb prediction of the, you know, I think they threw out there when the first meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee occurred a week, about 10 days ago. I think that was a number that just got bandied about as sort of a, I don't know, maybe a scare tactic. I think in reality, if they're weeding out 100 people a day, if they're reviewing 100 cases and we're seeing a net drop of 20 to 25 a day, obviously it's not going to take 18 months. But I think it's also because they expect 1952 to reduce the amount of work they're going to have to do. I think it's going to change their, you know, the whole process. Instead of looking for everybody that's pre-SORNA, now they only have to look for a subset of the pre-SORNA people. So I think, you know, in a sense, they're not rushing to do it because they're not looking at this project as the project parameters are going to change possibly in a week or two. That's my opinion.
So I would say that working closely with lawmakers and with governmental officials, they probably threw that out as a scare tactic, and a worst-case scenario that it could take 18 months. And
yeah, if you read 1952, it gives the state police 90 days to implement. So there's a big difference between 18 months and 90 days.
So we're going to move to the next caller. You've been on before. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, Leah had made mention to contact PSP with your questions regarding it. Is that still the case after what Bob said? And then also, which PSP do you go to headquarters where the notification when you have to go in to register, or your local police station?
I would
Great
call
question.
If you feel, basically, if you feel that you can just wait, that's generally the best approach because the state police, they're going through and they will find you. If you feel like you have to do something before you start spending money on an attorney, the first thing you're going to want is to call the Megan's Law Unit to see if you're on their review list.
So thank you. Area code 215, you're on Marcel in action.
Hi, yes. Okay, I'm at the Philadelphia halfway house here. I was convicted in 2008. I just want to know that I'm not an SVP, but will I be able to get off of registry if the Muniz case does get approved? Because I have a 2007 case, but I ended up going to that was a state case, and then it went to the feds where I had a distribution and receipt. And I just wanted to know if I'd be able to fight eventually, because I've been trying to get in touch with Aaron Marcus to see if he will actually talk to me, but he has not returned none of my calls.
He's inundated with calls. I can tell you that. But so go ahead, Leah.
Were you originally a lifetime registrant?
I just had turned off his mic, so we'll get him back for that question.
Right now I'm registered as a lifetime. I don't start probation until June.
When you were originally convicted, were you a lifetime registrant?
I don't know.
Okay.
I know that my PO tells me now that I am going to be lifetime supervised release as well as lifetime registration.
Okay, so what I would recommend is to grab a copy of the old statute and take a look at your conviction to see what that registration term was for 2012. And at that point, it will give you an idea of whether you're going to come off automatically or whether you're – if you were a lifetime registrant back when you were originally convicted, there isn't going to be that much shifting that's going to happen with you. So if you were originally a lifetime registrant, you're going to want to take a wait-and-see approach. If you were originally a 10-year registrant, then honestly, you're probably better off just waiting for the state to take you off. But I think the first step is to find out what your original registration obligation was.
So thank you. I've got people in the queue that I recognize your area codes are not Pennsylvania. So we're going to get to you, but I'm going to try to clear out the Pennsylvania calls as quickly as we can. So if the guests need to leave, so I'm going to jump over a couple of you that are actually ahead. So area code 484, you
Hi.
Are on Arsenal Next.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, you can hear me, okay?
Yes, please go ahead with your question.
Okay, people with two or more 10-year pre-SORNA,
that have completed their 10-year registration, but they were put on the SORNA as lifetime offenders. What's going to happen if they don't get their case reviewed in time? And are they going to be put onto the bill before this review gets done? And
I'm having a lot of trouble with this call breaking up. I'm going to try to come back.
Can you hear me better now?
If you can restate the question, or else we're going to come back to you because it's breaking up.
Yes, sir. With two or more 10-year convictions pre-SORNA that have their 10 years completed, but they were put onto the SORNA as lifetime offenders, what's going to happen when they end up having their review done past the time when this bill kicks in? Are they going to be putting these people onto the new law and have them registered until that review is complete?
Okay, so if you were someone where you were looking at a 10-year registry, but it was changed to lifetime, that's something that the state police should have shifted if it was something that you were entitled to. That's something that would have happened back, I want to say, 2016. But, yeah, so if you feel that you're someone where you should have been changed back to a 10-year registration and that didn't happen, you know, by all means, contact me or another qualified attorney to get more, you know, in depth detail. But the bottom line is that if you're someone who's entitled to relief under MUTIS, where you completed your original registration, you're going to come off this new law. If it's passed, isn't going to be able to capture you if you're someone who rightfully completed their pre-SORNA registration.
So I hope everybody was able to hear it. Leah, you're breaking up a little bit also. So we're going to jump to area code 717. You're on Marshall in Action.
Hi, I'm hoping you can help me out. No, I'm due relief to go back to 10 years, but from what I've read, do I have to have, like, the actual 10 years, or is the base year and then 10 years? It's just a little confusing with that, because people tell me I still have to register, even though it got off of 2020, I still have to make my updates in 2021.
It's 10 years of time on the registry. So if there was ever a period that you weren't actually on it, then there isn't going to be that credit to have. So what it comes down to is 10 years of time on the registry itself.
Let me drill into that a little bit. Say a person registers, and they go into a period of incarceration after 3 years into the registration period. They're incarcerated for 2 years, and then they register. Would that time be told during that 2 years they were in prison for whatever they were in prison for? Because they're not actually reporting in. Does that count as a registration towards the 10 years?
Depends on the version of the law, because earlier versions of Megan's law, you don't. But under later versions of the sex offender registration laws, you, like, basically you get credit for every day that you were on the registry, whether you were incarcerated or not, under earlier versions of Megan's law. And under later iterations, you get no credit for the time that you spent incarcerated. So if you did have a period of incarceration and you're someone who's entitled to MUTIS relief, what I would do is I would consult with an attorney to see what your options are.
So that was a great question. So I'm going to jump around a couple more times, and then we're going to be to people outside of Pennsylvania. Area code 484, you're on Arsenal in Action.
Yes, my question is about the review process. Is that going to put people onto the new bill before they've done the reviews?
I missed part of that question.
Yes. If someone hasn't had their case reviewed by the PSP to take them off yet, and the new bill is stated and 90 days passes, is that going to put those people onto the new bill even though they've completed their 10-year registration and relief, but they haven't finished the review yet?
So what will end up happening if that law is passed is that in all likelihood people will be switched over. You know, hopefully that's not the way it would go. I would hope that logic would prevail at the state police, and as they're doing the process of, you know, porting people over from, you know, Megan's Law and SORNA over to 1952, that they would just drop people off if they completed their registry. But we all know how bureaucracies tend to work. So, you know, be prepared that you may end up getting captured by that new law temporarily, but at the end of the day, the state police will complete their review. And if it appears that you're being missed, again, you know, contact the state police, contact the attorney to make sure that you're not overlooked because mistakes are made.
So thank you. This is the last call that I recognize clearly from Pennsylvania. 717, your old Marshall in action.
Hi again. The language in MUTIS says, quote, online publication provisions place a unique burden on the right to reputation, which is particularly protected in Pennsylvania. Doesn't this mean that online registry?
We lost the caller.
Yeah, right at the key part of the question.
Well, I think we know what the question is. So he wants to. His question is: doesn't the registration of merely putting it online the unique burden he would be headed toward? Isn't that punitive for everybody? How can they continue to do that?
And the answer to that is that it depends. If it's a conviction that happened after the law has taken effect, then it's punitive because it's not a violation of the ex post facto provisions. It's something where 1952 appears to be punitive as far as the online registration is concerned, the online release of information, then I think that that's going to be a problem under MUNIS. But one thing to keep in mind is if they change the law to make it so that the only information that's available is the person's name and an accounting of what they were convicted of, that's not necessarily going to be as offensive under the Constitution because that's public record. So
hey, this is
private information that's going to be problematic.
Sorry, this is Teresa. I just wanted to jump in. I think what he was going for was not the punitive nature so much, but Pennsylvania's right to reputation.
Right, I think that the WECT concurrence gives more clarity as far as the effect of right to reputation is. As far as your right to reputation, the government can infringe upon that as long as there is due process. So even if you have that right to reputation, can they still put your information on the internet? As long as there is enough due process, yeah, they can. So it all comes down to due process and whether it's a violation of the ex post facto provisions of the Constitution.
So thank you, Teresa, for clarifying where I thought he was headed. So we're going to go to the next caller, one of our previous prize winners who won a free registration to NARSL. Welcome to the phone call.
Yes, hi, thank you. Good evening. And my question is, it's regarding people who might have either an expunged conviction or a foreign conviction, or where they might be in a state where their registration period has ended. How would this new law affect them if they wish to move to Pennsylvania to reside there?
And in my opinion, if you've completed your registration obligations in another state and you move to Pennsylvania, there's a question about whether Pennsylvania would have the power to do it. If they try to compel you to register, contact an attorney because I think that that's something that is going to be worth litigating. Now, if you're someone where you had a conviction expunged, it really depends on what the legal effect of the expungement is. In Pennsylvania, if something has been expunged, it's something that never happened. So if it's something that never happened, then I don't see where they can maintain you on the sex offender registry if something has been expunged. If you're dealing with another state's expungement and the legal effect of that expungement is somehow different from the way Pennsylvania does it, then again, you're going to want to consult with an attorney from your original jurisdiction and from Pennsylvania.
In the case of a foreign conviction from outside the borders of the United States, I think that this gentleman is caught up in some kind of conundrum like that. What would your advice? Would it differ any?
If you have a foreign conviction, I think that you need to contact an attorney to look at exactly what's going on with that.
So,
excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're on NARSL in action, area code 215.
Yes, hi. My question has to do with a conviction in 2010 and I was lifetime at that point, and then when SORNA came around, I was on probation at that time, and then I was moved to tier one, 15 years. When the Alex Morrison case came out, the accounts versus conviction issue. So I was wondering if my case would have relief under demands.
Okay, what was your original term of registration?
Well, a lifetime, I guess, even though they told me 10 years in court, but a lifetime.
Okay, and was it lifetime because of multiple convictions, or was it because of the individual conviction?
It was because of multiple convictions.
Okay, so,
counts, I guess, really, but yeah.
Okay, so was it, and that's where it sounds like, if it's one of those cases where the convictions all happen at the same time, rather than, you know, conviction, then sentencing, new case, conviction, contact the attorney.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Area code 570, you're on Darcel in Action.
Hi, yes. My husband's offense was dated 6/30/99 out of Texas. He was convicted on 8/24/01 of sexual assault of an adult. When he came up to Pennsylvania, they made him register, and they posted them as aggravated assault. Now, would he fall under the 10-year Megan law? First law?
It depends on what the equivalent offense in Pennsylvania is to that Texas offense.
So in Texas, sexual assault of an adult, but up here became aggravated sexual assault.
Unfortunately, for this particular platform, it's going to take a little more analysis because you have to look at exactly what the Texas statute entails, so what the individual actions are, and then you look at what the similar offense would be in Pennsylvania. So what I would recommend is consulting with an attorney to see what the equivalent offense would be and what the registration term should be based upon that.
I would expand on that, Leah. Don't as to the caller, don't expect that they did the most generous, lenient thing they could do in the translation. They probably did just the opposite. So there's always the possibility that they over-translate the offense. So I would recommend you contact a Pennsylvania practitioner. So we're gonna shift gears here for folks. We have a Narsil Board of Director member who's joined the call a couple minutes ago, and she has something that she wants. We have a conference coming up here in just a few months, June in Cleveland. So Tammy, welcome to Narsil in Action. And
thank you.
You wanted to talk to us a little bit about the upcoming conference. And we've been receiving inquiries and comments and questions and stuff. So this is a good time to plug the conference and address some of those. So I'll give you a few minutes here to talk about our conference, because we want to get these people that are listening to consider being an attendee.
Most definitely. Thank you, Larry. And appreciate all the callers tonight. I'm just joining the call after a late work evening. I do apologize. I don't think there's any information on the call tonight, as usual. Our conference is going to be held, as Larry said, near Cleveland, Ohio, in a little town called Independence, June 6th through the 8th this year. We really encourage attendance. We encourage questions. You can always ask us on these phone calls, as well as by contacting us directly through email. My email is ohiorsol@yahoo.com. If you have any questions pertaining to the conference, and I know Larry and Robin can also address questions, as Brenda, any of us can, really. I did want to talk just a little bit about the conference, though, and make it very clear to people that our annual conference, and this is a special conference for us, this is actually our 10th annual conference this year. We don't have these conferences to make any money, so we don't profit from these conferences. That's not the mission at Narsil Hall. We also... Really, we have these so that people can network, they can learn. It's a great way to become more educated. We have topics ranging from the very basic for newcomers, as well to the more comprehensive topics and a lot of the legal topics as well. And I also want to mention to folks if they think that it's something that they're not able to afford, NARSOL, N-A-R-S-O-L, is the only group that we know of that offers a scholarship not only to help out with waiving the cost of the registration fee, but that also, for those that are eligible, assist with some expenses to our conference. So we will be getting that scholarship information, the eligibility information, the application on our website very soon at narsolconference.org. Again, that's narsolconference.org. That's where you can register to attend. And that's also where very shortly we will have the application up for those that are interested in looking at that. Another couple of options for folks is from time to time we do get people who say, hey, I want to cut some costs. Is there anybody that's willing to share a room with me? So we do, Larry usually in the past has done a really good job as well as Brenda has in trying to connect people who are looking to room with someone else. We're capable of doing that. It's always a good idea to see if there's anybody else in your state that might be traveling. Maybe you could politely or kindly ask if you could get a ride and maybe offer some gas money. There's a way to do that. The other thing that we encourage is to reach out to your state affiliate groups or an advocacy group that you may belong to that is willing to provide a sponsorship. Many times people attend and maybe they can bring back that information to their group if someone is willing to help out with getting your expenses paid to go to the conference. So it's really a good reason to reach out to folks in your own state and find out if anybody's attending. So we certainly welcome any questions that you might have. And again, that scholarship will be posted on our website very shortly. And we welcome questions.
Thank you, Tammy. I think that the conference address this year is actually conference.narsol.org. But to clarify, I think we'll send out a follow-up email after this conference call in the next day or two to direct people to the conference website.
Thank you.
Hopefully we're getting more and more stuff on the website about what who the speakers are. And do we have any grand speakers that we're ready to announce yet, or are we still working on those? Do we have any? I think we know for sure Paul Dupling's going to be there. Do we know anybody else?
We do know that David Fahey has confirmed that he will be there this year. We'll be having him on Saturday at the conference.
And he's the one who did. What's his relationship to us?
He produced and created the film. What is? Help me out, guys. What's the name of the film? I have another film on my brain right now. So.
Now I'm old, Tammy. I'm supposed to be justified to have old timers. What's your excuse?
I'm sorry. I had a long call on the way home from work.
Anyway, it won the Tribeca. What is that called? The Tribeca?
Yeah,
in New York. The Untouchables. Yeah. See.
Yes,
so somebody doesn't have old timers here. So. So, okay, thanks, Tammy. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So, all right, so we're going to get back to the calls, which we have sent out in the Q&A. Anybody who wants to jump in, you can be from any state, although it seems like we've picked up some more from Pennsylvania. Maybe these are repeats. But anybody in the country that wants to know how this may impact your state, please feel free to jump in and ask that question. So, area code 217, you're on NARSOL in action. Are you with us, area code 217? I'm going to put them back in the queue and we'll come back to them, area code 217. Area code 484, you're on.
Yes, there seems to be a little bit of a problem here with the PSP responding to the Munoz decision, in which they're not giving us an official statement of what their timeline and plan is to do these removals. In the meantime, it's going to be minimum 90 days until this new bill kicks in because it hasn't came out of appropriations yet. So what's going to happen is all these people that moved off the site are just going to stay up there until they decide to do these views. And who knows, they'll probably just end up letting everybody onto the new bill and then finish up the reviews then. Is there some kind of way we could do some kind of a class action to force them to give us a plan of action, how they're going to respond to this, or to speed things up, or hold them accountable, or make the site go dark for pre-SORNA people until they finish these reviews?
That is a great question. I'm going to ask Leah and Robert to hold your answer on that one while I have Mr. Producer draw another number.
Thank you.
And so we're going to answer that question, but we would like to award the final prize, which is a $50 gift card, not gift certificate. It could be a gift certificate depending on what you specify you want. So we're going to say, Producer, do you have a random number with the drum roll?
I don't have a drum roll. The last four digits of the phone number are 4119, and your code is 721.
So since the queue is relatively empty, if you want to press your star 6, we'll be able to see you a lot faster than looking for you if you're on this call, so that we can award you. I will be looking for you to see if the person is there, because we don't want to give your prize away to someone else if you're here. I don't see anybody in the queue, and so far I haven't found the 4119 on the still listen. So, Mr.
Another
Producer,
one?
I would say that if they don't claim their prize in the next few seconds, we're gonna draw another person. And if they are here, please press star 6 so that we can see you. And a couple more people got in the queue. Is it possible that their phone number that they texted you is not the number they're calling on?
Yes, that's
Andy?
Possible. Yes, that's possible.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to each person in the queue and ask them, are you 4119? That's the only answer I want. Is your phone, are your contestant number 721?
No.
Okay, thank you. We'll get back to you. Put yourself back in the queue. Are you contestant number 721? Put yourself back in the queue. Are you contestant number 721? Apparently, we don't have them. So.
No, yes, I'm in Texas here.
I didn't ask, are you contestant number 721?
I'm in Texas, yes.
Okay, no, that's not what I'm asking. I'll put you back in the queue. So they're not here. So go ahead and draw another one, Andy, and we'll see if we can find the person. So everybody who was in the queue, press star 6 again, and we'll draw another number.
The last four digits are 9576, and the code is 548.
Okie dokie. So, if your phone number ends or if your contestant number is 548, please put yourself in the queue. So,
excuse me.
And I've scrolled through looking for that number, and I don't see the 9576 either. So nobody wants a $50 gift card. Okay.
I think he's just waiting for the speakers.
So, all right. Well, let's get back to the question that was holding from the caller. Go ahead, guys. Who wants to take that one?
Okay, I'll take that one. Okay, so one of the drawbacks of trying to do a class action lawsuit is that it's going to take time. And by the time that has its opportunity to work its way through, you're going to see some type of movement either by the state police or by this new proposed law. So there's a question of whether it's really going to be worth it and whether it's really going to compel the state police to move any faster. Because ultimately, if what we're asked for is them to do whatever it is that they're doing, if they're already saying that they're moving as quickly as they can, there's a question of how much more a court can really do to compel them to move faster. So is it possible to try to do a class action lawsuit to try to get them to move faster? Yes. At the end of the day, is it going to accomplish anything? I can't say that I'd be optimistic about that.
The other component of the question I heard was, what about having people continue to register. He didn't say that, but he's had the registry website go dark. What about that?
I think that it's something that can be requested. Yes. Do I think that it's going to be plausible as far as pulling down people who had to previously register under Megan's law and then were increased under SORA? It's going to come down to court, and this is a little bit of legal analysis. I'm just kind of thinking through how this would go if someone filed a lawsuit. So the court was asked, when you look at the potential cost to the public versus the rights of the people who were supposed to come off, the risk of having people who are supposed to be maintained on the registry actually come off when it goes dark, I think that the state police would make an argument that that risk would be too great. Now, of course, the counter to that would be, well, to take off the people who are clearly entitled to be taken down, but that takes us right back to where we are right now, which is that it takes time to sort through absolutely everyone. So do I think that a court would agree to let the site go dark on all people who are pre-SORNA? I don't think they will, because I think the percentage of lifetime registrants would just be too high. So although it's something that's plausible, you know, making that particular argument, do I think that it's going to be a winning argument? I don't think so.
Okay. Area code 717. Have we addressed your question? Okay, area code 847. You're on Marcel in action.
Yes, I just want to say one thing real quick. Is thank you guys for everything you guys do for our sex offenders. I appreciate it. My second question is this registry going to affect any other states, or is it going to help other states? Or, you know.
The registry is basically specific to Pennsylvania. Where it happens to have effect on other states is that the Pennsylvania shares that information with the nationwide database, and with it being on the internet, something that's publicly visible.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to know if it's going to help other states, you know, pass their law.
It potentially will. We discussed that earlier in the program, that litigation could be launched in other states using the analysis of this court. So yes, it could potentially, but on its surface, there will be no change in the other states immediately without litigation.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. Thank you so much. And again, thank you guys for everything you do for the sex offenders. I appreciate it tremendously. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Area code 717. We tried to get you. So start about that. You're back.
My question is that since 1952 is going to be a new law, does that mean it cannot be applied retroactively to Megan's Law to people?
Their intention is to make it retroactive, to basically apply to people who had to register under Megan's Law. There's a particular subsection of statute that directly applies to people who had to register under prior statutes.
I see. Thank you.
So, another Pennsylvania area code 484. You're on Arsenal in action.
Mr. Larry, this is not my actual question, but in regards to the gift card, if nobody has claimed it, I didn't know how to properly answer because I kind of came in with just having these questions in mind. But if nobody has claimed it and nobody obviously was available for it, I welcome it. If it's still available and your producer says it's okay.
We appreciate that volunteer. What we will do, since we had so many people in the queue, we're going to try to give the winners a chance to claim it, because they may have been there. We may have overlooked them in the rush to try to keep the call moving. People need to understand that we're using free platforms. We're not in a studio with each other. We don't have separate channels of communicate with one another. So what we would normally do in a regular broadcast is kind of different with what we're doing on this free platform we're using.
That's good. At least I figure out, yes, I'm like, I mean, if there's nobody on the queue, maybe I'm the one left. Maybe I have a chance on the gift card, you know? Maybe I can pull dibs on this and see a Reno person didn't claim it, and I did say, no, it wasn't me, and I was honest. Anyways, honesty, you know, wins the day any day. But to my question, basically, you're welcome. I really appreciate you guys. for everything you do. And earlier I just couldn't finish, and I wanted to have a better understanding for someone, because it scared me, and I'm under a lot of anxiety and stress for a long time, nearly 15 years of being in the registry. And my conviction was in a military facility in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. However, I was always a resident of Pennsylvania. I lived in the base. My conviction was in 2003, and my registration, when I nothing was spoken on my on the court or the sentencing about Megan's law or registration requirements of any kind. In fact, my files are, according to my record of trial, and obviously according to me being there, at the end, the judge said that it was sealed. So, which, again, I don't understand how we see that to begin with, file or a court proceeding that is sealed. Anyone could have access to it, you know, especially any law enforcement entity or whatever. But regardless, point being, I obviously wasn't until I was about to be released from the brig that I was taken, I was required, in order to be released, I was taken to the hospital to have blood drawn, supposedly for FBI records, and then asked where I was going to leave and demanded that I provided an address, which obviously was all up to me. But obviously, I lived in Pennsylvania, so that's when I came in, and then they told me, oh, by the way, you got to go to your local police or whatever. I did that, and then they told me, oh, you got to go to the PSP. We don't think that you even know we're here.
We've got your question. We've got your question. He's got a military conviction, and so how does that affect all this stuff? Because we've run out of time for any further build-up.
Okay, so as far as military convictions are concerned, they're treated the same way as out-of-state convictions. So the length of the registration is going to depend on what the similar offense would be under Pennsylvania law at the time of the conviction. So you're going to want to consult with an attorney, or at the very least, pull a copy of what you were convicted of in the military, pull a copy of the statutes as far as how they looked back in 2003, and, you know, make the appropriate comparison.
So he raises the point about they didn't tell him when he did the plea, but see, it would be very difficult because at the time he was in the military, they would have no idea where he was going to be living once he had served his time, so it would be difficult. There would be many jurisdictions that they would have to say, well, you might have to register for this amount of time in this state. There's 50 registries out there at the time of this conviction. All states had a registry, so it would be impossible to advise
him. He said that something about providing a Pennsylvania address and then come here?
Well, he said that when they got ready to release him from the brig, that they demanded an address because they were advising him to register, and when they demanded the address, then that's when he got roped into Pennsylvania because they told him, by the way, if you don't register, we'll put you back in the brig.
Right, and that's where he stuck with Pennsylvania because that's the address that he provided. So even if they didn't give notice at the time of sentencing, it doesn't do anything to eliminate the registration obligation. If it's a military conviction, you know, it's unfortunate, but the argument that they make is that at the time of sentencing, they can't just sit here and run the list of the registration obligations of every jurisdiction. So, you know, I don't know if his military conviction actually should have resulted in some type of a Pennsylvania registration requirement, but I think that's where consulting with an attorney after pulling the statute that he was convicted of and looking at the Pennsylvania statute is where it's going to be helpful.
Well, did you want to plug the law firm of Bickerton and Bickerton again? We've not done that since the first hour, so you'd be welcome to tell people. There's quite a few people still on here.
Oh, yeah. We're Bickerton and Bickerton Attorneys at Law. You can find us on the internet, www.bickerton-law.com. Also on Twitter, but I strongly recommend that people don't communicate with me about their private details on Twitter.
That would be a big 10-4. And if you would like, when we send out the follow-up email in the coming days, I can include you on this is the attorney you had on the call. We had on the call, and this is the attorney that if you have any questions specific to Pennsylvania that you could reach out to, that this attorney would love to be retained to do some work. So we're getting into the final 10 minutes of the phone call, so we're going to try to accelerate how we're moving through because there's still people in the queue. So we're going to go to area code 913. You're on Narsil in Action. Anybody who's dropped out or I accidentally cut you off, I've tried not to do that, but feel free to get back in by pressing star 6. So go ahead. 913, you're on the air on Narsil in Action. We will come back to you, area code 913. Area code 484, you've been here before. You're on Narsil in Action.
Yes, I have a follow-up to my last question. Seeing how sections H and I in the new bill specify that neither section applies to people that their time has expired under old law, how are they going to actually send a notice to these 10-year registrants that had their time expired or people that actually weren't even on the registration before? How are they going to send a notice for them to be put onto this new bill if they haven't finished the review, if all these sections say that their time, if it was expired, it doesn't apply to them?
Okay, so the question is, how are they going to notify people that that basically they don't have to register anymore?
How are they going to tell, how's the PSP going to tell people you have 90 days to register with this new bill in accordance with the new law? Because they haven't finished their review yet on these people that are due relief, so they're going to send out a notice saying, "Hey, you have to register with this new law because we haven't finished your review yet." But both sections H and I both say that if your time has expired, it doesn't apply to you. So my guess is, aren't they going to have to do this review before they send someone a letter stating that they have to be on the bill?
I think that they should complete their review before they send out any type of a notification, but I suspect that if they haven't completed their review, they will probably send out some type of warning saying, hey, look, you're on the registry right now, and this new law that's coming into effect may affect you, but keep doing what you're doing until you hear further from us. You know, so like, is that what they should do? Ideally, no. Do I think that's how they will end up handling it if they don't complete their review by the time this law comes into effect? I think that's how they will handle it. But the hope, you know, knock on wood, is that what they're doing right now is prioritizing the people whose registrations would have lapsed already or should have lapsed already.
So he's a very clever reader. He sees all these technical nuances that no one can think about when a comprehensive piece of legislation like this. This is where you need a lot of thoughtful, deliberate debate, and it sounds like in the committee process that hasn't happened to the extent that it should. So area code 913, we're going to try again. You're on Narsil in Action.
Hello. Thank you so much, everybody. And I took an Alford plea back in 1992 in Missouri, and then my probation was revoked, and I went to jail for 4 years. When I got out, and that was in 2000, I got out, and I moved to Kansas, and I didn't have to register in Kansas, but Missouri made their retroactive law that said that I had to be a registered for lifetime, and so they sent a note to Kansas, and Kansas contacted me, and I've been registering since, and I'm just wondering if, if in Pennsylvania, if someone would be in the same situation, would that get rid of that registration requirement?
That's a very interesting question. It comes down to the interpretation of whether Pennsylvania would actually have jurisdiction over you. So when you're dealing with someone who has a Pennsylvania conviction and they end up moving to another state, one of the questions becomes, you know, once you have moved from one jurisdiction to the next, where is your registration obligation? There's an argument to be made that if you move from one state to another, that your registration obligation to that original state terminates. Now, I'm aware that there is at least one other state that even if you move from one jurisdiction to another, if you come back to that original jurisdiction, that your registration obligation is going to be there forever. So let's say you move from one place that has a registration obligation to one place that doesn't. That original state is still going to expect you to update your information with them.
Would that state happen to be Wisconsin? Because that one's on our radar for that.
I don't recall off the top of my head which state
that was. That state is on our radar. They're assessing people the registration fee after they leave, and they're telling them to mail it in along with your update, and it's either $50 or $100, and we would like to see that litigated with the right individual. So we're aware of Wisconsin doing that.
Right. Now, what Pennsylvania happens to do is that if you move to Pennsylvania and you have a registration obligation in another state, you have to register. So that's where that particular circumstance, as far as one person moving from one state to another, that's a conflict of laws issue. You have to look at what each particular state's requirement is going to be. Like I said, if you're moving from a state that maintains a registration obligation, no matter where you move, if you move to Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is going to make you register.
So, well, I hope that helps. We're going to try to zip through these remaining calls. We're in our final moments of the program. So, Erica 469, please go ahead with a quick question.
Yes, I live there in Texas, and I had to register since 2014. I got convicted, you know. They offered me to not have to register if I take a plea bargain, you know. So I wouldn't take the plea bargain, so they took me to trial and convicted me, and now they've made me register for a lifetime, you know. And I appealed it, and the judge said I didn't have to register while I was under appeal, but the registration man still made me register. So it's just,
what state are you registering in?
I'm in Texas.
You're registered in Texas. I'm not sure that we're going to be able to help you much on that, but if you want to take a stab at it, because that's specific to your case in Texas law.
Is your original conviction from Pennsylvania, or is it all Texas?
Texas.
Okay, I personally would not touch that, because every little fiefdom, every state is different, so you're going to really be better served speaking to an attorney that handles sex offender registrations in Texas.
We have a great attorney we recommend to people that's on our calls from time to time, named Richard Gladden. Look up Mr. Gladden and contact him, and it's Gladden, Gladden. Area code 484, please go ahead with a quick question.
Yes, sir. I have three docket numbers, one conviction. Two of my docket numbers are pre-Megansall, pre-1996. This new 1952 law, I have an SVP title because of the 1992-1993 events. Can I appeal my SVP title now?
Great question.
I would want to look at the specific details of the case, because if one of the questions is what year were you found to be an SVP, because if it was back in the 90s, there were significant problems with the SVP statutes back then in Pennsylvania. So your question is one that's exceptionally fact-specific, but in general, when you look at the active notification requirements that they have with SVPs, I think that there's a good muted argument there as far as the registration obligations for SVPs are so onerous that it's considered to be punitive. So I think that there is definitely some type of an issue there. I don't know how strong it would be. The strength of the argument is going to be dependent on your particular case facts.
So thank you. I've communicated with the production end of the program. We're going to extend for 5 minutes and try to finish the queue. So if you're not in the queue, we're going to not be able to take anymore, but we're going to try to finish who's waiting. So I can't give a number here because you're anonymous, but anonymous, you're on Arsenal in Action.
Yeah, I had the winning number 548.
What is the last four digits of your telephone number?
9576.
Producer, do you have the full phone number so we can contact him?
Of course, yes, I do.
Okay, well, you'll need to feed that to me so I can contact him. Okay, well, thank you. Now we know who won the grand prize. So,
so the volunteer
that offered, we won't need you to accept the prize. Okay, 484, you've been on the call before. What's your question?
Oh, well, I was going to say, you see, it pays to be honest. The person did come and claim their price. You see, that's why it pays to be honest. All right, follow up. I just wanted to say, on my registration, it was obviously from the military thing. I started in 2004. It was supposed to be 10 years. After SONA, I was declared a Tier 1, and basically I was extended to 15 years. Obviously, I should have been done a long time ago, but I'm still in it. I guess my question being, even though the whole out-of-state thing, I still was made to register in Pennsylvania, even though at the PSP I was told I probably wasn't going to need to be, but I was made to. My question, obviously, I'm expecting to have relief. Well, since the decision of Muñiz, I continue to be in the registry, and I was also wondering, besides the fact of possibly being one of the people considered for immediate relief, if there is a compensatory per day. I keep reading in the forums on NARSO of $1,000 a day since the decision of Muñiz because of being, or since the CODUS struck down the certuary, and if there is compensation for every time they have me on the registry, legally so, with the appropriate attorney, and I think the person would be great for that. And that's my question, and I'll leave you guys to that. Thank you for everything.
I'm going to leave with the $1,000 a day thing. I think that there has been absolutely nothing that I've seen to support that. You know, for people who are being kept on longer than they feel that they should they contact a civil attorney to see what their options are? Yes. My recommendation is to try to make sure that you do it on a contingency basis and that you're not paying out of pocket for it. But yeah, as far as that $1,000 a day, any type of, you know, guaranteed payment for the time that you're spending on, that's just not happening right now. In order to get that, you have to get some type of a settlement. As far as your particular relief, it does sound like you're eligible for relief under UNIS. What I would do is call the state police to ask them what their timeline is for you in particular. If you feel like you can wait as long as the timeline that they're giving, great. You know, if you want to pay someone to litigate it, that's an option as well. Generally, you know, I think that the patient's route is likely to be the most cost effective. But again, if you contact the civil attorney to find out what type of a settlement they think that you can get, that might have an effect on your overall plan.
And it sounds like he's having some doubt about whether his offense might be covered, but I would suspect that it probably is. But there again, he would need to contact the law firm of Bickerton and Bickerton or some other practitioner to find out if the analysis has been properly done. So we're going to go to our last caller before we sign off for the night. So, Scott, you're on Marcel in Action. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call, and I apologize if this was asked before. I have an offense in New York from 2005 where I was adjudicated as a level one, not required to be on the New York Internet, Pennsylvania resident, was given the 10 years, and then when SORNA came into play, I was moved up to a Tier 3 lifetime registration. Just wanted some advice, have a good communication with Albany in New York, and I'm wondering if I can get off the registry or here in Pennsylvania based on that or how I should proceed.
If your original registration period was for 10 years and then they moved you to a Tier 3, first step, contact the state police to find out what they plan on doing with you. If they indicate
the Pennsylvania State Police?
Yes, because you're on the registry in Pennsylvania, correct?
Yeah, I've been really since day one, because I was a Pennsylvania resident, and it was an internet sting in New York, and I was given the lowest tier in New York, which doesn't require me to be on a public internet. But in Pennsylvania,
right,
that wasn't the case. I 10 years I got, and I should contact Pennsylvania first.
Yes, you should contact Pennsylvania first. Okay, when you first came back home to Pennsylvania, did they start you out at 10 years?
Yes.
And then SORNA bumped you to life?
So SORNA bumped me to lifetime as a Tier 3.
Yes, so you'll definitely want to give the state police a call, find out what they plan on doing with you.
So I should call them immediately?
It's I think that that would be the best option. If you can wait, you know, by all means wait, but if you want to get a faster answer, you can call to find out what their plan is, because they are doing a review. There are certain people that they have already selected out that they're in the process of reviewing. I don't think that it hurts to wait, as long as you feel that you can wait. It's a judgment call.
What do you mean wait? Wait to see what they do with me?
Wait to see if they take you down on their own, because that's what they're doing. For everyone that is entitled to relief under MUNIS, they're going through and they're doing their own manual review. So
okay.
If you feel that you can wait, you can just wait for them to finish what they're doing. But if you feel that you prefer to get faster relief, then give them a call. If they don't give you a satisfactory answer, talk
yeah,
to an attorney.
I'm thinking New York, you know, might be okay with that, but do I need to communicate with New York too, because I have to let them know what I'm doing in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania is the one that's making you register,
mm-hmm.
then that's where you have to start.
Would Pennsylvania go back to applying New York law like they did it before SORNA was implemented?
What Pennsylvania will end up doing is going back to what Pennsylvania was doing back when you first came back. So what they tend to do at that point is that they're going to find what the equivalent offense was and make you register for that period. If there was no equivalent offense, then they were going to make you register for however long New York was making you register.
So possibly I could end up registered, because New York's is like 20 years.
What was New York's back when you first had to register?
I think it was 15 years.
I think it was actually 10. I think it was 10. I think they gave you the second 10. When the first 10 ran out, they changed the law because they couldn't let those people go. So
I'm 12 years into it, so the sooner I can get off, the better. But do you advise I concurrently contact New York as well, or just contact Pennsylvania?
At this point, I see no upside in you contacting New York. It's not going to help you one way or another. Yet.
Okay.
New York is really not a factor because you're not having to register. You're registered in Pennsylvania because of their law. New York is only a factor if you ever go back.
I can see where New York could be a factor. If New York comes back saying that his original registration period was supposed to have been longer than 10 years, then he'll have to give New York a call, but hopefully it won't come to that.
Monitor where I'm at once a year. Once a year, I update them on where I'm at, or once every couple of years.
So, all right. Well, that's a great ending question. So, we really appreciate. I'm glad that Leah and Robert and Teresa could be here. Thank you for coming. Thank everyone that showed up for the call. It'll be available for replay shortly, as quickly as we can get it up in segments. So stay tuned for our next announcement of our great new phone call, Can They Do That?, which we're going to launch on February 28th with Catherine Stroll as our first guest on Can They Do That? So for this episode of Narsil in Action, thank you and good night, everyone. Ooh.